welcome to a three-inning save podcast. Jacob Birch, Eric Steven. How much are we just going to talk about Shohei? How much of this podcast is just going to become the Shohei Ohtani podcast?
Well, here's the deal. He's the thing this year, right?
Yeah.
We to the point where we have a record-setting pitcher, record-setting contract for a pitcher. That pitcher debuted for the Dodgers this week. And he's not an afterthought on this episode, but he's down the run list of stuff to talk about because Shohei Ohtani, not only did he play and do very well when he played this last week, but he also said, my wife, earlier in the week. So we have a lot to talk about.
I hope you don't do that like when you're in the scrum interviewing him like you do with me.
Can you imagine?
Just,
that'd be unbearable.
Anyways, yeah, we're going to talk all about that. Actual full nice week of spring training games to talk about. Questions from Craig after this.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So don't worry, we're going to talk about Shohei. But last week, you and I were talking about sort of old friends and a more traditional sense of the term than your normal sense of the term, and catching up on players who had signed elsewhere
Or were close to signing.
Et cetera. We were talking about how Dodgers brought Kike Hernandez back, felt like a good fit, but there wasn't room on the roster, and so he had four suitors, none of whom were the Dodgers. However, if you trade one of the players on your roster,
exactly. They, you know what? They made room. And so this is one of the
I think worst. I saw, I'm trying to remember the order and I read it. I think it was they're trading Margo. No, you texted. That's what it was. And I saw that. Did you text that after the Kike news had broke or only after the trade had occurred?
Oh, great question. I think it was after the trade
because it just seems like I can think of one reason they do this.
You're right. That was the reaction. Like, so the funny thing, so we record Sunday nights and usually like, that's fine. It doesn't really matter when we record. Anytime you record and it doesn't go out like the second you're done, like there's always a chance of something happening right before it goes out. Not that we were like talking about we were like eulogizing Kike Hernandez or anything, but it's just funny. Like, and then literally he signs like right that morning. But that day the Dodgers were they playing the Rockies, I think, in Salt River. So like one of the longer, like 45-minute trip across Phoenix to get there. Manuel Margot was in the starting lineup, and then the news progression was Manuel Margot scratched from lineup. I think Juan Trevino of MLB.com had it first, and then Juan Trevino scratched from lineup because he's been traded to the Twins. What? Okay. And then it's like, oh, they traded him. So I guess welcome back, Kike. And then sure enough, like within a few minutes, it was like sort of the reporting was, yes, the Dodgers are closing in on an agreement with Kike Hernandez. It's contingent on Margot being traded to the Twins, which wasn't finalized, but by like lunch, it was finalized basically. And so you mentioned, right, last Ken Rosenthal, The Athletic, had a thing last weekend about the four finalists for Kike Hernandez, and it was the Padres, the Giants, the Angels, and the Twins. Turns out the Twins instead got someone who was traded to make room for Kike Hernandez. But on Thursday, after it all, a few days after everything was official, in an interview on Foul Territory, which has been a great place for, because it's player-centric pretty much. Ken Rosenthal is on there mm-hmm. regularly, but it's a lot of players, so I think more players go on there, feel more comfortable, and they say a lot of stuff on there. And Kike Hernandez had a wide-ranging interview. He talked about collusion in Major League Baseball, et cetera, et cetera. But he was also going into the details about this deal. He did mention that, those four teams may or may not have been floated out there as a decoy, like essentially. And the fact is that it actually came down to the Dodgers and the Yankees. So much so that I even wrote a wrong team in our notes. But he ended up choosing the Dodgers, obviously. He also said he had a rough agreement with the Dodgers like a month ago, and they needed to trade Margot, and then something fell through. There's been other reporting. I don't think this is the exact trade that fell through. But earlier, Juan Trivio, again of MLB.com, reported that the Dodgers had talked to the Red Sox about a potential Manny Margot for Kenley Jansen trade, but that never really moved past like initial stages and stuff. So I don't think that's the one that like fell through.
It would have been really funny to trade for Kenley Jansen so you can sign Kike Hernandez.
I mean, you're really bringing the band back together at that point. So that was fun. Like all that, but also like, all the sort of subterfuge or whatever, it ended up became moot anyway because Kiki's back with the Dodgers. So he gets 1 year, $4 million. You could argue too, right? Like he's coming. He was okay with the Dodgers. He was better with the Dodgers than he was the last year and a half with the Red Sox. But he's coming off two down years, like almost given like defensive struggles and offense struggles, like near replacement level, or possibly below, depending on how you're measuring it. He got $4 million, and now he's talking about collusion. Like it's like kind of the polar opposite of Anthony Rendon, where it's like he's kind of making a good point because there really shouldn't be like unsigned free agents out there right now. But maybe he's not the guy to make it. Like like literally Ahmed Rosario, who the Dodgers also traded for last year, was having a down year and then did better with the Dodgers. He signed with the Rays for $1.5 million, and with he has incentives, but it's only like an extra $500,000 if he hits. I think he has to bat 620 times. Like if you're going to choose one of those two guys, like Ahmed Rosario would be the guy to be like, hey, like maybe. But no, it doesn't mean the point is invalid. It's just like it's just funny, like coming from that. However, so to make room for Hernandez. The Dodgers traded Margot to the Twins. Now, there was a three-player deal. The Dodgers also sent minor league shortstop Rain Doncone. He was with the Ranch Cucamonga, low A, last year. And they got another shortstop, Noah Miller, from the Twins. Now, he is going to end up in, I believe, I would guess double A with the Dodgers. Miller is more advanced than Doncone. He is considered to be excellent defensively, but it's really a guess whether he's going to hit or not. The Dodgers also have Trey Sweeney, who they got in another sort of roster clearing trade in December. They traded Victor Gonzalez and Yorbit Vivas to the Yankees. That was when they made room for Shohei Ohtani and Joe Kelly. And then Sweeney's going to end up in AAA. Sweeney's looked good. He's been a non-roster guy this spring. He's played every day but one, I believe. Looked really good just generally, and he's also fairly solid. So neither of those guys are on the 40-man. Sweeney is someone who could literally help them this year. Like they have more depth at the position than they did, So that's good. the salary wise, it's essentially a wash because with Margot and Hernandez, because Margot is getting paid $10 million this year. He has a $12 million club option for next year with a $2 million buyout. The Rays were already sending $2 million to the Dodgers to cover part of this year. And had the option been declined, the Rays were going to send another $2 million. My favorite part about this was that second $2 million wasn't going to be paid till August 1st, 2026. So the Dodgers are sending $6 million to the Twins, plus that the $2 million if the option is bought out. Now, their $2 million is like, I think it's sometime late in 2024, like December or something. And then sometime in 2025 for the other million. So it's just funny how these things get worked out. But so essentially, it, from the same salary slot, the Dodgers are having Hernandez rather than Margot. And obviously they, you know, they gained a short, a more advanced shortstop than they had in the minors. In doing so, now you roster wise, Hernandez does add more versatility because he can do infield in addition to the outfield. And we mentioned he's been struggling the last few years, but also pretty versatile, pretty well liked in the clubhouse. Generally, has a good postseason record. He was literally 3-for-8 in the NLDS and like no Dodgers hit, so like he stands out there. But he did do better after the Dodgers traded for him. He also had double hernia surgery in October. So the Dodgers are really betting on Kike being like, he's going to be healthy and he's going to be productive. It also makes room roster-wise in the outfield should the Dodgers need to bring up Miguel Vargas or Andy Páez during the season. We'll get to those two in a moment, but essentially, so the Dodgers only have, we'll get to this, why this is important a little bit later. They only have 17 position players on the 40-man. So 13 of those are the active set, right? Of who once again, we are claiming that the 13 position players are set for the roster. No, and then we're going to wake up tomorrow and they're going to have another deal. No, two of them are catchers. Two of the extra four are catchers, Diego Cartaya and Hunter Fiducia. And then the other two are Miguel Vargas and Andy Páez. Miguel Vargas has been playing left field exclusively this spring. You know, he played second last year. He played third in the minors as well and first. But, you know, it's just a matter of trying to find a spot for him. So I think that is like part of the reason why they did that move. Like gives a little more opportunity for those guys to play in terms of if they need extra depth. So that's where they're at. But one of those, the 17 position players on the 40-man, is not going to be a pitcher this year, but he is going to be a hitter. And it is pretty fun to watch that guy hit. It's the now betrothed Shohei Ohtani. So he played his first spring game last week. We thought that was going to be like the big news for him last week, right? Finally got into a game as a Dodger. He in his first two at bats, he struck out looking, and then he grounded into a double play. So bust, clearly. Why did they sign this guy for $700 million? And then, so he's played in three games total so far through Sunday, and he's reached base in every one of his last seven plate appearances. So I don't know. That he's looking pretty good. So he homered in his third at bat on Tuesday, and it was close to an inside pitch, basically turned it around. He's left-handed. He went opposite field, a fly ball to left field for a home run. Look, the elevation in Arizona and the wind in Arizona certainly helped. But you still have to be incredibly strong to do that to that pitch, like to hit it out. It's just, he's really fun to watch. So on Friday, Ohtani singled and he walked twice. And then on Sunday, he tripled in his first at-bat and followed that with two singles. So in all three of the games he's played, the batting order was Mookie Betts leading off, then Ohtani, then Freddie Freeman. And it sounds like that's going to be how it's going to go, you know, at least to start the season. I would imagine that's what the plan is. But on Sunday, those three, each batted three times. That's been generally about what the regulars have been doing, like bat three times and then, you know, kind of their day in terms of the game is done. They do obviously work on the backfield and stuff too. But those three combined to go 7 for 9 with a triple, a double, 5 runs, and 4 ribbies. So it's going to be fun to watch those three, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
Were you able to watch any of it?
This is a busy week. I did not go watch anything live. I did watch a lot of the highlights, especially from his first game. And I think I'm scrolling down. We're, I assume, coming up pretty soon. Yeah, I did watch all the highlights of Yamamoto because I think maybe it's just my slight preference. I like the pitching side of things, I think, a little bit more than the hitting side. And also just the Shohei is a fairly known quantity.
Yeah.
Obviously a unicorn quality, but, you know, we've seen it around. I'm really intrigued in, like, how is this going to translate? Because the range, I would say he has a fairly high floor, you know. I don't think outside of really bad injury luck, knock on wood, it seems unlikely that someone with his stuff would be bad. But the range of pretty good to best pitcher in baseball, all on the table. And all on the table could possibly immediately.
For Yamamoto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm very, every time he pitches, I'm going to be watching the full highlights.
So he also debuted, as you mentioned, on Wednesday in Surprise. And like you say, like, he pitched 2 innings, right? You can't, what are you going to glean from that, from a spring training performance, except, holy crap, look at this guy pitch. Like, basically, it's really fun. More importantly, I think, like, the stuff is great, right? Like, you saw the pitches, fastball, splitter specifically. He had another, like, a really nice curveball in there, too. But he was just, his command is awesome. Like he seems like he's just in control. Again, 2 innings, but, like, look, he has a track record in Japan. He's won 3 straight MVPs. It's hard not to be excited. So that was Wednesday, right? Like, then later that night, at literally like 11:30 Pacific. So it's past midnight in Arizona where Shohei Ohtani was. It was past 1:30 where you were. And Shohei Ohtani posted on Instagram, "Hey, I'm married." basically, like, essentially that. It was, you know, a few paragraphs, but, like, as is the case with just about everything, Ohtani is, like, very much in control of, like, the flow of information on his life, which, hey, good for him, man. Like, you don't, I would not want.
Pretty stunning that he can be.
Someone that famous can still have stuff about him that is not known. Like, it was such a big thing when his dog appeared, like, when he won the MVP. They're like, "Who is that dog?" Like, you know, like, and everyone was, like, on it. And it took, like, a month before, like, figuring that out, right? Nobody knows, or at least, you know, it's not publicly, at least. Nobody knows Ohtani's wife's name or who she is, and that's what he wants. And good for him for being able to, like, still sort of toe that balance, right? Like, Ohtani even met with reporters, which I think he knew was going to happen when he put out the Instagram post on Thursday morning. He said, like, essentially he wants to announce this now to, like, get it out of the way and not be a distraction. Dylan Hernandez had a really thoughtful column in the LA Times about sort of explaining Japanese celebrity culture. Dylan's mom, I believe, is Japanese, and he speaks Japanese as well as Spanish. Just great, great asset to have just as a reporter in general, but he gets a lot of good insight just and just knowing the culture and stuff. It was a good article, but he essentially framed it as Ohtani, like, in his meeting with reporters and the statement as well, was essentially offering this, like, little bit of information to reporters now in exchange for privacy, right? Or at least trying to do that. And, like, how he does that, he mentioned in the article there was a, like, before Ohtani, like, the most famous athlete in Japan was a figure skater. I forgot his name off the top of my head, but I think he announced a marriage, and then it became such a, like, public thing that very soon after they divorced, and he basically, the figure skater, was like, "I don't want this scrutiny on her. I want her to live a normal life. So the best way to do that is to get divorced." It's, like, tragic, right? You wouldn't want anyone to, like, have to go through that sort of stuff. But Ohtani has proven very adept at sort of handling balancing his private life and baseball life in a way, and so far it's worked. And so, yeah, but like you said, everything he does is news. So it was just very funny, like a very late night thing. Oh, by the way, I'm married. So back to Yamamoto just for a second. So he's probably going to start, or almost certainly, I would say, they haven't made it like official, but he's almost certainly going to start one of the two games in South Korea, which brings us what I wanted this episode to be about mostly, you know, as, and this is like before I was doing the notes and then, like, man, a lot of stuff happened last week. I forgot, you know, like you're just sort of recapping, but basically wanted to talk about like the opening day roster. Right now, the Dodgers only have a week and a half left in Arizona. They have Monday off, and then they play 9 straight days to finish off the Arizona portion of their Cactus League schedule, and they head to Seoul. So we'll talk about the roster, right? So at the risk putting another Monday move into the ether, the 13 position players, as we mentioned, are pretty set.
And I mean, I think if there is another move, there has to be a corresponding move. There's not a lot of flexibility there. Players who have either don't have options or have earned the right not to even have that be a consideration. So
exactly. Yeah. Like the only, semi feasible, right? Like literally the only, Gavin Lux went through arbitration, but like he can be optioned. James Outman could be optioned. Those guys have jobs, right? Like, so those are starters, right? So, I will say, it's not like alarming to the point of losing a roster spot or a starting spot even, but Lux has looked very shaky at shortstop, after missing a year, with the knee injury, and like literally I think in his first 3 games and 16 innings at short, he's played a couple games since then, but it was like he only had 2 balls hit to him and he made errors on both. It's like, good God, right? You're just like that. I mean, the timing of that is like, that's just like in a way bad luck. Now obviously he made bad plays, but like that's rough to shake, right? When you're not even getting chances and then you biff the 2 chances you get. But like he made a few plays over the weekend too. But so in terms of the South Korea rosters, so the Dodgers and Padres, they get extra players for the series. So I've heard 2 different things. One is that they'll get 29 players. I've also heard 31. It's possible that since I heard the 29 players, which was from an MLB official, that there was some either cajoling or negotiating, like in terms of the how it's sort of the logistics of it. But whatever it is, it's an extra amount of players. But you can still, no matter what that number is, you still only have 26 active players for each game.
Okay.
So
what they did, taxi quad.
Yeah, pretty much. So what they did in Australia when the Dodgers went in 2014, same thing. There's been a few Asia trips for other teams as well. Essentially, you 3 extra players, and then 3 are on the taxi squad. Now, but what that really means functionally is that when you're basically cutting down your spring roster, right? Everyone starts spring training with like, I don't know, like 60 something players in camp, and then you're at each set of roster cuts, you get closer and closer to the opening day. So instead of having to cut down to 26, you only have to cut down to either 29 or 31 by the South Korea trip. So like what I think this will mean is that it means the 3 starting pitchers who won't be starting in Seoul. So Tyler Glasnow, Yamamoto, very likely the 2. Glasnow's looked really good, I think, so far. They'll be there. But the other 3 starting pitchers, like, and we'll get to who the 5th could be in a second, but, you know, Bobby Miller, James Paxton, I would imagine they will be among the 29/31 players, but also not active because they're just not going to be used. So, so what that does, those 3 starting, it's, you think about it, like building a roster, right? Under the course of a normal roster, on any given night, you have 13 pitchers, but usually 5 of them are starters. So, and which means like 4 of them are not, you really only have nine pitchers because you have your starter and then your eight available bullpen play, and sometimes it's not even eight because the usage and all that kind of stuff. So it's not really that big of a hindrance, like you know, in terms of needed to be on the roster. So what you don't necessarily need to add three relievers to like fill those other three active roster spots. So I think what that essentially means is that if the three starters are inactive, you basically could carry two extra relievers probably, and then another position player. Now, if we're narrowing this down, I mentioned before the Dodgers made their first roster cuts of spring training on Sunday. It was 12 total players. Now, among them was Andy Páez, and then the two catchers, Hunter Verducci and Diego Cartaya. So right now, the Dodgers have 14 position players on the 40-man roster. And, like, among the non-roster invitees, there's not anyone that's, like, screaming, like, you know, going to get a roster spot anyway. So, and not especially not to the point of, like, we're going to put this guy on the 40-man roster just so we have an extra guy in Seoul for two games. Like, that's not happening, right? So I think essentially Vargas is going to be active in South Korea as an extra pinch hitter, essentially. So I think that's my guess there. But then there's still some, like, maneuvers, I think, to be made on the pitching side. Do you have any thoughts, I guess,
either side of either, you know, pitchers or hitters that I can remember from spring training. It hasn't been a ton of dynamics, but there's always usually been a roster spot that has been interesting. And yeah, just outside of weird trades, which again I don't see them doing, or some injury, it just seems so locked in.
Yeah, and like you could argue,
I do have a question for you.
Yes,
let's you know, someone gets the 7-day stomach bug. Well, I mean, let me pick something not career threatening whatsoever. Right. Someone goes on the IL.
Mm-hmm. He gets the rumblies.
Yeah, who's and assume positionality doesn't really matter. Who is next in line after Vargas, do you think?
So I think it's probably Andy Páez.
Okay.
He's a weird case in a way. Like, he's looked really good this spring. He's hit a couple home runs. He's in good shape. He's played right field and center field. So he had had shoulder surgery in May. He played one. He and Johnny DeLuca were on the same path. They both tore up Double A to begin the year. Both got promoted to Triple A at the same time, early May. First game in Triple A for Páez, he on a swing, like basically tore his shoulder and like done for the year. So he spent all that time rehabbing, but looked great so far. And again, you know, it's spring training. Take it with you. I think he's batted like less than 15 times. So like, but still looked good. Or no, it's probably around 20. I think it bats roughly. But I think it would be a lot to expect like from him just given the time he missed, but given where the roster's at, I think as an extra guy, for sure, they would be fine with like using him, as an extra guy, you know, potential pinch hitter could fill in all three outfield spots. So like that, and like actually hold his, it's not like Vargas who's like left field's a new position for him. Like Páez could play any of the three. So yeah, I think he's pretty clearly the next guy.
Okay. Now let's go to the other side, which is not set in stone.
Oh, I like that you used that word.
I didn't even mean to.
So did I tell you, like last year, right before Gavin Stone made his major league debut, there was a Dave Roberts was being real coy about who's going to start the game Gavin Stone ended up starting, and he didn't want to, you know, as they usually do, because Stone wasn't on the 40 man yet. So of course they want to always be very careful about what they say, and so he's talking about like Dave Roberts, one of the pregame scrums, was talking about different options, and he's throwing out, like, you know, potential options, but, like, we all knew it was, like, that's not happening, right? And I just at some point, like, after he said, Roberts, that's when I said, so would you say it's not set in stone? And then and then he just kind of looks at me. He's like, good one, Eric. Like, I have a clip of that somewhere that I still have saved because I love it.
You need to send that to producer Brian so he can just randomly insert it.
I will at some style.
It's a good one. Good one, Eric.
So I was trying to think here. Okay, so back to Gavin Stone, or back to the pitching staff. Walker Buehler going to be on the injury list to start the season. He mentioned, I think, this last week, he's aiming to, like, get into a game during the freeway series, which would be, like, the start of his ramp up, like, toward being ready. So we've talked about this. I think a reasonable time frame for him would be probably ready around May 1st, you know, something like that, where April is essentially his spring training. Something like that. He's on an innings limit. Like, he's not really – there's been some, like, semantics about – I think, like, Brandon Gomes, or maybe it was Mark Pryor, I don't remember. He's talking about, well, he's still, like, technically in rehab because he has to check all these boxes. But he's healthy, right? He completed the rehab last year. They made the choice. Like, he pitched once for Oklahoma City, two innings, very end of August, and – they made the choice, like, if they continued and tried to push it, even joining the Dodgers rotation, which would have been what they needed the most, that would have been a hard ask, because he's talking about only 13 months after his second Tommy John surgery. So that was not very feasible. And then, or you're asking him to pitch in relief, something he's very rarely done. He did it when he first came up to the majors, not very well. It's not something he's comfortable with. So I think they sort of made the joint decision that even if everything were to go right, he might not have been at the level they needed him to be to, like, contribute in the playoffs. And then, plus, they just wanted to make sure he was ready for 2024. Also, there was the risk of, like, he would have perhaps, you know, re-injured himself, or, like, you know, pushed too hard, and then, like, it would have set him back for this year. So they opted to, like, nope, we'll just make sure he's ready for 2024. So, but even coming into this year, I can see on one hand where fans are like, well, he was going to be ready, like, at the end of last year. Why isn't he pitching? Well, it's because after pitching, like, I think it's 67 innings over the last two seasons total, including two innings in the last 20 months, like, he's not going to pitch a full season of innings. Like, he's on an innings limit this year. So they're just deciding, like, when those innings are going to come, right? There certainly could be a time during the time when he's actually healthy and pitching that he gets hurt again and he has to be sidelined. So it could be a natural innings limit, if you will. But you don't know when that's coming. And even if that comes, the whole point is, like, just to try to get him to be ready and fully going in October, right? That's, you know, that's sort of the hope. So I think that's where he's at. So it seems like he's in a good spot. It's just he's just not ready yet. But what that does is open up a competition for the fifth starter. So Emmett Sheehan, I would have guessed going into spring training was the favorite for that spot. But he was among the pitchers who threw, like, live batting practice, I believe, to Shohei Ohtani. And I think he said he like ramped up a little too hard, and he's had body fatigue. It's what it's been called, and he was shut down for a bit. He just started, like, resumed a throwing program on Saturday, the day before we recorded. So, like, I don't think he's even going to be built up in time for when the Dodgers start their, like, domestic regular season. So, like, assuming he's the fifth starter, right? His game would be April 1st, first game. I don't think he's going to be ready by that's 4 weeks from now, just given where he's at, because he hasn't started building up yet. So, like, so I think he's out of the equation for now. Gavin Stone, as you mentioned, as we circle back to here, He's looked great in his three outings, including three scoreless innings today on Sunday. So there's always the other option of simply starting Ryan Yarbrough, right? Who's the long man, the swing man in the bullpen for the first month or so with Buehler out. But listening to Dave Roberts earlier this week, it sure doesn't sound like that's what they want to do with Yarbrough. This is from Dave Roberts on Saturday, per Sportsnet LA.
I think the best fit for him for this roster is a swing guy. He can spot start. He can come out of the pen and take down a few innings if need be. And he can get a lefty out or a lefty run if we need that. You know, we're very right-handed heavy with our starting rotation. So to have a lefty that can take down innings or, you know, get a run of lefties out is huge.
How much does that impact when
so you're the telling quote there is literally Dave Roberts saying the best fit for him on this roster is a swing guy, and he went into it. You heard it there. So
I want to interrupt real quick because absolutely. I'm the dummy on this show.
Yeah.
You're the smarty, but I'm not. I feel like I nailed this one. I feel like I've been saying that.
I don't consider you a dummy, by the way.
I know. Thanks, buddy. But I feel like I've been saying, like, you would constantly bring up, maybe it'll just be your role. But I'm just like, I feel like this is how they see him. And I feel like they want to stick to that. So, yay me.
You also figure, if we're especially talking about just independent of the domestic regular season, for those South Korea games, you know Yarbrough's getting an extended run in one of those two games, right? Like, because as it stands, right, Glasnow's going to get four starts in the Cactus League. He went three innings the other day. Yamamoto's only going to get three. He went two, so he's probably going to be like two, three, and then four before South Korea. So, like, it's very possible that, like, your Yamamoto could be, like, capped at, like, five innings. Not like, on a pitch limit, but more like they won't push him. You know, they have a set bullpen. It's 2 days total, that kind of a thing. So, like, you could definitely see where – like Yarbrough is that guy, like going
and
two or
and
three.
I could see this, like we've seen it with Ross Stripling in the past, where, you know, maybe near the end of the season where they have a better idea of where the rookies, young players stand, and they don't really need to kind of feel out the roster anymore, and they say they just need to win games. With the division this year, hopefully that's not really necessary, but just say that's a thing. I could see them going, no, starting Yarbrough is our best bet. That's what we're going to go with. But it seems to be a pattern of this front office is they like having a swing man, and they really like trying to get the young guys starts early if the opportunity presents itself to kind of get an idea of how they hang in the big show.
Yeah, I think that's right. So the other like starting pitchers on the 40 man, well, just before we get to those, Landon Knack, who's also looked good in camp so far, struck out seven in four innings in his two outings. He was optioned on Sunday. So on the 40-man, the only actual starting pitchers, other like Sheehan not available, Kershaw's technically still like active. They haven't put him on the injury list. He's not going to be ready. He's back in camp, by the way. And he's going to be until they go to South Korea. Then he's going to go back to Texas. But Michael Grove and Kyle Hurt are the other two guys. And, like, they like Grove, I think, more as a reliever. They're stretching him out just in case. But, like, I don't see them, like, going, you know what? Kyle Hurt's going to be our starter. Like, especially Stone has a leg up on him, I would say.
Yep.
So, in other words, like, I think Stone, fifth starter, penciled in right now, right?
Yeah.
In a very nicely fashioned pencil. Strong ink. Ink lead.
Ink? Lead.
My pencils have ink.
It's graphite these days, Eric.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Lead's like poisonous.
You're telling me your ceilings don't have asbestos? So for the relievers, right, like the locks, you got Phillips, Gratterall, you never know with relievers. He actually just got into a game. I don't remember if it was Saturday or Friday. That was his first game. But, like, relievers don't need that much time to build up anyway. So, like, it's not a big of a deal. Whatever the reason was, seems like he's totally fine. Phillips, Gratterall, Kelly, Brazier, Trinan. He's been pitching and like fine, and then and Yarbrough are locked. So that's six, right? Of the eight. I would say Alex Vesia is probably a lock too. I'm probably shortchanging him by not just simply including him in the locks, but he basically is. So you're talking, that's basically seven spots. So that's one open spot in the bullpen for the March 28th roster, but maybe three spots for the sole roster. So just looking at the rest of the actual roster, like people in camp, Matt Gage is the only other lefty reliever aside from Vesia and Yarbrough. And again, Yarbrough is more of a swing guy. So the lefty non-roster guys of note, I would say TJ McFarland and Justin Wilson. I believe the only other lefty in camp who's on the non-roster guys is Steven Gonsalves. He's pitched a lot too. Wait, was he sent down? He was also reassigned Sunday, so like out. Ricky Venasco was optioned Sunday. He still has yet to make his major league debut. I expect he's going to pitch in the majors this year, but you know, not right away. The right-handers still on the 40-man in the bullpen are J.P. Feireisen, who had not pitched in a game since June 2022. He had shoulder surgery, came back from it. He did not look good in his first game back. Again, it's a spring training game. Take what you can, but he'll pitch this year too. Don't know if he's necessarily going to make the opening day roster, but like he's there. Grove, again, who I believe is better suited for relief. Kyle Hurt might be in the same boat. Gus Varland, and I got to be honest, that's not the strongest group of guys. Like I think fighting for that, but it's also the last spot in the regular bullpen, as it were. I think it's a matter of when is Daniel Hudson going to be ready.
He's been
fine, but also they've talked about like execution might or might not be there just yet. I've been sort of mentally viewing him as ready for the, if not March 28th, sometime very soon after. But more towards that than South Korea, right? Like, I don't think they're going to shoehorn him unless they think he's ready.
Sure. He's not on the 40-man, right?
Right. He's on a minor league deal.
So that a move would have to come with that.
But that they're also going to, like Clayton Kershaw is going to go on the 60-day at some point.
Do you think he's at, oh, okay. There you go. Sorry. I thought they had used that.
So they used May and Gonsolin so far.
Got it.
Oh, and then a little bit of a weird twist. It's not so much that weird, but so Nick Frasso had shoulder surgery in November. Then they added him to the 40-man. So they could – he was reassigned Sunday is what I'm getting at. So from a standpoint – he's not going to pitch this year. He had shoulder surgery. Then he also came out in the last few days that he had hip cleanup as well. They said he might be able to pitch in like the Arizona Fall League later in the year. But like the point is if they needed a spot, they could call him up and place him on the 60-day IL. But that would earn him a major league salary and service time for the whole year. But it's not a situation like he wasn't injured like in the majors, you know, it was from last year. So it's a weird like ethical divide, right? Like, are they screwing him out of a year of service time, or did they just do him a favor by just adding him to the 40-man anyway, even though he's not gaining service time right now? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's definitely a gray area. It's not that cut and dry for me. But that's an option. But yeah, in terms of like other stuff, there's also like Nabil Chrismat. He's been okay. But he's probably someone who could pitch at some point in the bullpen this year. Don't know about when or right away. But that's kind of where they're at. I mean, it's not that many, you know, open spots. But, like, there's a decent number of guys who could potentially be on there. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting. I think it's also interesting where, especially with the NRIs, is do they end up just accepting a AAA assignment? Do they try to latch on somewhere else?
Well, so it used to be, if you're a major league free agent,
mm-hmm.
you got an automatic like opt out right before opening day.
Right.
Now it's more standardized where I think it's, you get an automatic opt-out, I believe, like in June 1st.
Oh, interesting.
And then other stuff is like essentially up for negotiation.
Okay.
So some of these guys might have opt-outs, right? But like, I don't know. Like, so
that just makes it more interesting than me.
Right. Exactly. So, I don't know specifically on some of these guys, but that's essentially roughly where it's at. But as we know, everything is about Shohei Ohtani, whether it is or isn't. So he's reached base in his last 7 consecutive trips to the plate. These are spring training games, so they don't count. But if they did, he would only be halfway to the Dodgers' record for consecutive times reaching base. Which player holds this franchise record?
Trivia answer from Eric, unless I guess it right after this.
With over 2,300 hotels across the U.S. and Canada, Best Western is perfect for our annual spring hiking trip. It feels a little like okay, back to the hotel. What a great day. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Who holds the franchise record for most the reaching base and consecutive plate appearances?
I got that. 14 straight times. Yep.
14 straight times. All right. During that first segment, I wrote down my 3 guesses.
Yep.
And they are in order: Steve Garvey.
No.
Duke Snyder.
No. Would you like a hint before your third one?
No. Okay. If depending on the hint, maybe I'll take a 4th guess. Mm-hmm. Zach Wheat.
I wish. No.
Here's the thing. Anytime it's a franchise guess and it's a hitter, I'm going to sneak Zach Wheat in there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to not say Zach Wheat. All right. What's your hint? I'll take one guess off your hint.
It's in my lifetime, but not your lifetime.
Oh, man. You're just like,
wait, you're an April birthday, right?
Yeah.
Oh man, it's very possible that you were conceived during this streak. That's all I can think about right now. Anyway, most likely because of this streak, it was so great.
Ronce.
No, in 1985, Ronce was with the Cubs. He did play the Dodgers in a few of the games during this streak. It was my first favorite Dodger, Pedro Guerrero.
Okay.
July 23rd to the 26th, 1985, the Dodgers were home. They were facing the Pirates and Cubs. He was 0-for-2. Guerrero was in the first two at-bats on July 23rd. Then he did this. Double off Rick Rushel, double off Rod Scurry. That's the end of that game. July 24th, walk, single walk after that third time up. Greg Brock followed with a grand slam. Then Guerrero walked again in the eighth inning. The next day against Ray Fontenot, he walked again. Then he hit a solo home run off Ray Fontenot, a sixth inning single, and then was hit by a pitch in the seventh inning. And then the next day, July 26th, double off Dick Ruthven, a two-run home run off Dick Ruthven, and then he walked his last two times up. So that's 14 straight, seven hits, including two home runs, three doubles, six walks, and a hit by pitch. He scored 10 times in those 14 plate appearances. He drove in only four, but it's not his fault. People weren't on base. To end the streak, when he made his first out in 15 plate appearances, he drove in a run because it was a sac fly on July 27th. So I will say I fell in love with Guerrero in June 1985. That's when he hit 15 home runs in a month. It tied the record, major league record for that month at the time. I think Sammy Sosa since broke it when he hit 20 in 1998 in June. But as hot as Guerrero was in June, he was even better in July, even without like the big homer totals. But during that 2 month stretch, Guerrero had a 1323 OPS, 19 home runs, 39 RBIs, 52 runs scored in 45 games. He was hurt a little bit, especially in July. But he raised his OPS from 756 at the end of May to 1030 on July 31st. So that's a good 2 months, I would say. On the season, Guerrero led the National League in on-base percentage and slugging percentage, and subsequently OPS, which was 999, and OPS plus. He hit 320 with 33 home runs, and he finished third in National League MVP voting behind my mortal enemy, Willie McGee, and in second place was RBI leader Dave Parker. Now, I half-jokingly say, like, Willie McGee stole a lot of things from me as a child. But in reality, like, the MVP that year should have went to Dwight Gooden, who was so ridiculous on the mound that he probably should have won. But I'm over it, so because I'm an adult.
Do you know the major league record?
I think it's 16, but I don't remember who has it.
So I'm trying to find, like, I have on Wikipedia, and I don't want to trust it, but for what I have, if you count all ways of reaching base... so that include anything that
like catcher interference,
stuff like that. It's Earl Averill Jr. with the Angels in the 60s. If it's always that raised your on base percentage, it's Piggy Ward in 1893.
What was his number?
17. Bo for 17.
Oh, okay. So Piggy Ward.
Piggy Ward. 1800s name nickname, so good.
Yeah,
we need to bring that aspect back of it. Everyone needs a silly nickname.
What was I will say we are getting better. What was it? The guy the Giants signed, Jung Ho Lee.
Mm-hmm.
He, I believe. Okay, so his dad is like a coach somewhere now because I just saw a thing the other day where. During a spring game, like he did a pregame, like, you know, he posed with his dad, right? Mm-hmm. I think maybe at the Rangers, maybe he's working with the Rangers. But like, so his dad's nickname in Korea was Son of the Wind. So Jung Ho Lee's nickname, Grandson of the Wind. That's wind. That's so good. Like that kind of stuff. That's a nickname, man. Like that is a well-earned, awesome nickname.
All right. It's time for...
Questions from Craig.
Today is the annual Girls' Day in Japan and is marked by by traditional doll displays and other traditions. With that, let's get to the questions. All right, then. Freddie Freeman,
noted,
a traditional doll display enthusiast, had 730 plate appearances and 223. Sorry. Oh man,
he's old, but he's not that old.
That's just in 2023, which is among the highest amount in Dodgers franchise history. Today's trivia is about that top tier of making to the plate in the season and not the art of reading numbers. Freeman's 730 plate appearances tied for third most in Los Angeles Dodger history. Can Eric name the other four LA Dodgers who round out the top five?
Okay, so before I answer, I would say, speaking of Freddie Freeman and traditional doll displays, Freddie Freeman bobblehead day is Saturday, March 30th at Dodger Stadium against the Cardinals. So perfect timing by Craig to get that question in. Okay, so 730 plate appearances. He's third most in LA Dodger history. The other four who ran out the top five. So definitely up there is Maury Wills, and I'm guessing he's number one in 1962.
759, number one.
Yeah, so that year the Dodgers played a three-game playoff, which counts as regular season games. Maury Wills played every game, including that. So 165 games is the major league record, and that's not getting broken. Like, you could theoretically get someone who's traded at a like coincidentally strategic time where the team he was traded from had very few off days to that point.
Well, so maybe we're coming up on a game series where two teams will have two extra games for a week. Maybe a trade will occur after Seoul.
Oh, I get you. Yeah.
And then they'll sneak another one in there, and then like another trade.
They get traded in on July 31st or whatever. Wait a minute. Oh, man. I like your thinking. If they would have just waited on the Manuel Margot trade, like that would have been the way. That would have been the way. Okay, so that was that. Then it's a matter of like who played a lot.
I'll let you know. I guessed one name on this list correctly. I might have gotten two.
Okay, so I don't even. I'm just trying to think here. I was obsessed with on the back of baseball cards in the 80s. They showed at bats, and like I think Juan Samuel, it was either in his rookie season or like in his first two seasons or something, where he didn't walk a lot, but I saw 700-something at-bats. I'm like, oh, this guy must be great. Like, you know? And so like that was just such an eye-popping figure, and I'm using that to stall. Okay, so, man. Let's go with another leadoff guy, Brett Butler.
730, tied with Freddie Freeman for third. Okay. That was my guess, by the way.
Nice. So I need two more.
Both lead off.
Oh.
Let me, I'm going to double check real quick.
Oh, okay.
One definitely, and the other. I have to double check.
Okay, so I will go, the other possible double check, I'm going to say Trey Turner.
Nope.
Oh. But he, okay, all right. He played like every damn day in 2022. Oh, he was, no. Yeah, 2022. Right? Might. What about, I don't remember him playing Steve Sachs?
Nope.
Then I'm gonna go Davey Lopes, and I'm not confident at all.
You shouldn't be, because it's not one of the correct answers.
So LA Lee, okay, so I first was gonna say, before all this nonsense, I was gonna say Rafael Furcal.
It is Rafael Furcal.
Oh, all right. What's the other one, then?
Juan Pierre.
God, of course. Played every day. Yeah.
That makes me happy. Next, Freeman became only the eighth player in Dodger franchise history to record 700 or more plate appearances, a.k.a. really good baseball players, according to Eric, in two or more seasons. Can Eric name five of the seven Dodgers to clear that mark?
Okay, so I'm assuming this includes Brooklyn people. You got to remember, though, you know, 154 games for the Brooklyn years, but still they were also a ridiculous offense. And so Maury Wills.
Yep.
Let's go back to the well with Brett Butler.
Yep.
700 plate appearances. Man. Let's say Steve Garvey.
Yep. A nice little streak here. Only two more. There are four more. You need to name two.
Okay. 700 plate appearances. Ugh. Man, and it's okay. Doing it twice. Okay, let's go. Let's go to Pee Wee Reese.
Yep.
And then I wanted to. First, I'm going to go Duke Snyder.
Nope.
What about Jim Gilliam?
Yep. There you go. You want to take a stab at the other two?
Yeah. Man. Okay, so. Oh, Juan Pierre.
No.
Oh, he didn't do it. Okay, so he still played. Steve Sachs?
Nope.
Okay, yeah. Who is it?
Jackie Robinson.
Ah, nice.
And Sean Green.
Okay, all right. I like it.
Which former player who happened to have played for the Dodgers for his career holds the major league record of 778 plate appearances?
I believe that's Jimmy Rollins.
It is Jimmy Rollins.
2007?
Yes, indeed.
Nice.
Since 1995, only two Dodger pitchers have 90-plus plate appearances. Can Eric name these two moundsmen to ever acquire that many in a season?
90. God, that's so many. Look, it's the 30 starts batting at least three times, you know. That's wild. So you're thinking, so it's 95.
I'll let you know that the games for these two pitchers were 34 and 35.
All right. I'm assuming he did that for wild card era, not because the first year was in 95, but 95 was a strike short year anyway. So anyway, what about 34 and 35? Do it then. Let's go with. I'm just going to go with Clayton Kershaw.
2013.
Yeah. Then the other one, I think it's one of two possible people. I'm going to say Kevin Brown first.
On the money, 1999.
Nice. Yeah.
Well done.
Nice.
You did good. First one a little iffy, but.
Yeah.
I'm going to phrase this the way I wanted to phrase it. Is it 3 weeks before the Dodgers open their season against the Padres?
No.
It is 3 weeks before
the Dodgers. No, it's less.
So let's start the contest by predicting the two central divisions. I know what he's saying. He's like, we're getting close to the season, but it made it sound like since the Padres and Dodgers are starting off, let's start in the Midwest. Yep. Name the teams that will finish under 500 and pick the division winners and any potential wild card teams.
Okay. I'm not looking at any projections for these. Under 500s.
Oof. Some bad teams in the Centrals.
Yeah. Okay. So, Eric, Jacob... Under 500s. Okay, so. White Sox, for sure.
Yeah.
here's the deal. So, Brewers are in a weird spot, right? They traded Corbin Burns. They won't have Brandon Woodruff this year. they are called up Jackson Churio or signed him, and he's probably going to play, going to be a rookie. You know, you don't, it seems like they're still in it. So I'm hesitant to say under 500 for them. The Reds are in a weird spot where they have all this young talent. They did sign some pitchers, very risky pitchers. So I'm not bullish on them. The Pirates are, I don't think they're necessarily good, but they're kind of, some of their guys are on the upswing. But you know what? I'm just going to say Pirates because I don't trust them. And then you have like the Cardinals coming off a terrible season, but they signed like all the veteran, like the starting pitchers. And they also got Sonny Gray, which I thought was a very good deal, but the Lance Lynn and what, Kyle Gibson was the other one?
Sounds right.
I'm not, and then the Cubs I think will be good. But do I really think like, so are the, it's going to be Cubs, Brewers, Reds, Cardinals, are they all going to, oh man. I'm going Cardinals under 500 again. It's, even though I don't really trust that at all.
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking?
This is going to be a very we usually are, you know, within one or two. I have to. I'm like going through my brain. I think the Cardinals are going to win the division.
Okay.
I think last year was an aberration. was a lot of aberration, not entirely.
Yeah, I that's way more likely than my pick.
I think the Cubs have to be expected to be the favorite in the division, I would think.
I think so.
But I'll go with some St. Louis magic.
But do you think the Pirates are going to be under 500?
The Pirates will be under 500, and I'm trying to think if I wanted to add anyone else to that list.
It's Brewers or Reds would be the other two. In the NL.
No, just Pittsburgh.
Okay, so in the AL, you also thought the White Sox were going to be bad.
Oh, yeah.
So the Royals were bad. They're probably on the upswing. I know there's been like maybe two Ken Rosenthal columns about, look at what the Royals are doing. Like, I'm not buying it for this year. No. So they're not going to be 500, so they're out. Then you have like the very underachieving the last year Twins and Guardians, who like should be good ish but like I don't know.
I think they'll both be good enough to hit 500, but the other three won't.
And then there's the Tigers, who are also in this weird like, are they good yet?
Yeah.
They're like close to being good, but like, so I'm gonna go under 500 for Detroit as well.
Yeah. So I think we are the same, except for who wins the division in the NL.
So, but we're not picking division. I'm saying no wild cards for the Central this year.
We are picking the division winners.
God dang it! Okay.
We're doing all of it. We're doing okay, all so, three okay, wild so card you, teams. Not no wild okay. card teams out of this division.
So I'm saying the Cubs then.
I mean, no, the Cubs will make a wild card. Sorry, I'm changing my mind on that. Cubs will make a wild card. The Cards win the division. The Twins win the division. The Cleveland is just above 500, doesn't make anything.
So you say the Twins win the division. I think I will. Oh, man. I think I'll also say the Twins.
Okay.
And no wild card. But you have Cubs wild card with Cardinals division. Mm-hmm. Okay.
There you go.
We clearly nailed it.
Yeah. Realistically, will either Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery pitch a major league inning in the team's first five games this season? If yes. not, when is the earliest we'll see either of them pitch this season?
I think yes. So they're the weirdly named Boris 4, as it were, now is down to a Boris 2. And if you, depending on how you want to shoehorn him in, JD Martinez could make it a Boris 3, who's still out there. Boris famously has, like, you know, his own, like, agency, like, training facilities. So, like, I would imagine both Snell and Montgomery are still getting loose. Maybe not the formal way of, like, pitching in a game, but they're probably, like, getting their, having their arms ready to where they're doing like a side session or bat, like live, facing live hitters for the equivalent of, say, at this point of spring, two innings, maybe three to this point. So I think they're staying ready. So I think if they do sign, they would be ready to go in the first five games. We will know. So last week we mentioned Bellinger was the first of those, the Boris four, to sign. He went back to the Cubs, 3 years, $80 million, with an opt out after each of the first 2 years. Similar deal for Matt Chapman, who went to the Giants, 3 years, $54 million, and also has an opt out after the first 2 years. But so the, what's even funnier, the Giants announced it as a 1 year deal.
With two player options.
With two player options and a mutual option for a fourth year. Yeah.
Mutual options ever get picked up?
So that's the thing. Like, very, very rarely. I think John Becker, I saw a thread with him of Fangraphs. He mentioned like two names, but yeah, that's the same thing. It's every time a mutual option, I'm like, oh, that's clearly not getting picked up. It's usually just a matter of like, sometimes there's differing buyouts. Like, you know, I think it's the same buyout.
That makes sense.
But, yeah, just, but for, in terms of like, for the competitive balance tax, right? Player options are considered guaranteed years. So that's why it's considered a 3 year, $54 million deal for Chapman or whatever. But, it's just funny. Like that's the template. And so it's also making like teams now who are like, oh, Snell could do like, you could just swoop in and get Snell for like a 3-year/1-year deal, you know, like, or whatever. Like, like maybe Gavin Stone doesn't have the, I don't know. Like, but yeah.
Last season, Dodgers were about league average in successfully stealing bases, 80.8% versus the league average of 80%.
Nailed them. Stealing league average. Sorry.
Stealing 105 bases on 130 attempts. Looking at the projected lineup order, do you think the Dodgers, is that really what's going to cause us to be explicit? Do you think the Dodgers will attempt to steal more or less or about the same this season?
So, yeah, Freddie Freeman led him last year. I think Shohei Ohtani is also fast. He's going to be hitting with Freddie Freeman on. So you have a scenario like Betts is an occasional runner. He doesn't really run a ton, but he's going to be a double digit guy probably. I think Lux could add a little, not a lot. Outman is in the teens, or, you know, possibly Taylor's going to be probably in the teens. I'm trying to think. Teoscar's not going to steal. Muncy's not going to steal, like, other than, like, you know, these occasional.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Barnes gets on base a little bit higher clip and he sneaks a few steals in just to add. No.
I'm going to say, while you think, about the same, and James Outman is your team leader.
That seems fair. I think I do think they're going to steal more.
Oh, okay.
They're going to both, yeah, well, they're going to attempt and steal more. I would imagine the rate is going to be roughly the same.
Okay. When I do buy a cup of coffee to go, I buy cold brews regardless of the weather outside. Jacob, I know you drink coffee. What percentage is hot versus cold? And Eric, outside of drinking hot tea with dim sum, is there any other time you drink hot tea? So, I usually get hot coffee, but if in the summer months, if we're in the 90s or above, it's cold brew. And there are definitely some times where I want something cold and refreshing, and I'll get a cold brew. But I would say outside of those peak summer months, it's something like 6 or 7 to 1 caught the cold.
The only time I can remember having like a cold coffee-ish drink,
mm-hmm,
are those like Starbucks, essentially
the milkshakes, the frappuccinos,
but like the ones that are in the stores, that it's like, literal, oh, okay, yeah, it's like more milky than that. And that's really just like a coffee flavored milk.
Yeah.
At that point. So like I'm not a big cold brew. I'm just not a coffee guy generally. Mm. I think the last two coffees I've had were at Dodger Stadium, just because it was either late / I was super tired, and I don't think I've had coffee since 2022. I don't remember. Not that I'm like tracking it. I don't have like a days since last coffee board like that. I just update it all the time. But the funny part to me about this is, I try not to, I copy Craig's questions into the show notes, but I'm not really reading them. I'm just more like I do the make sure the font's right or whatever. But I'm not really reading them, other than I might like see like part of a sentence or something. So the one thing I saw about this is me drinking hot tea, and the first thing I was thinking of was when I was answering, I'm like, well, other than dim sum, not really. And then I didn't realize he included dim sum in the thing. I did have hot tea during our New Year's dim sum this year with Craig, and that is the last time I've had hot tea. I think generally outside of like a dim sum place or like another Chinese restaurant, like a sit-down restaurant, or like maybe when I'm sick, I might have a hot tea, or like, you know, if my throat was hurting or something like that. I do have like usually some sort of single bag, like brew tea I can make like a one-off like hot tea of, but I usually use those just to make iced tea. Like I either mix in like a peppermint tea with like Lipton iced tea or like whatever the generic brand of iced tea is, and just do it that way. But like, yeah, I'm just not a big hot tea person.
I like tea. The closer it gets to coffee, the better. So for me, that's Pu'er, which is my favorite tea. And then I had been searching for a long time for a decaf, you know, quote unquote tea or herbal tea that I liked, because I really don't like most of them, most of the common ones. And then I found out the very hippie sounding roasted dandelion root.
Nice.
It's chocolatey, dark kind of coffee-ish, and it's delicious. So that's been my default night tea.
The thing about roasted dandelion root is you either have to like be barefoot when you're drinking it, or be wearing Birkenstocks or some open-toed sandal. I think that's the norm. I think it's a rule. I don't. It's not that I dislike it. It's literally not my cup of tea. So I think that's as good a way of any to end this. We're going to have, you know what? I might end up having coffee when the Dodgers do open the season in South Korea, because the games are starting at 3 a.m. Pacific. So just to be staying awake, I think that could be a situation, but we'll see. But that's it for us. We still have a few episodes or at least one more episode before the Dodgers open the regular season, but that's it for now. We looked at the potential opening day roster. We looked at Shohei Ohtani married. We looked at a lot of stuff. That's our episode of the 3-inning save this week. I'm Eric Steven. That's Jacob Birch. Brian Salvador produces us, and Craig Manami asks questions. Thank you for listening, everybody. We will talk to you next week.
Good one, Eric.